This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
I'm Shifa Situ, and this is Here and Now in Malaysia, produced by the Economic Transformation Programme. On this week's episode, we're going back to nature.
Once they dug up a nest that was actually hatching, so there was a huge mother turtle coming in to lay her eggs, surrounded by all these little baby turtles, and she was sort of flinging them into the air as she was digging her nest.
That's Hayati Mokhtar. She's a Malaysian artist who runs the Lang Tengah Turtle Watch in Terengganu.
I'm a firm believer that you can't love what you don't know. And I think with people living in increasingly sort of urbanized conditions and cities, when you don't know something, well, you don't understand it, you don't appreciate it. And if it's lost, well, you never realized it was there in the first place.
And here's Rizal.
If you go to Nepal, you can go to Kathmandu and take the same picture that everyone else already took. Or you can go to Chisapani area and actually be with the people there, the locals, talk to them. Go, experience stuff. Life is awesome, man.
So you might be wondering, what's this guy talking about? Rizal is a self-confessed addict of voluntourism, a new and expanding area of responsible travel that combines volunteering with travel, often to exotic locations around the world. So what's happening on this week's episode is this. We're delving into the world of voluntourism. It's a world that comprises travellers, students, grassroots hippie communes, the largest travel agent in the world, conservationists, activists, cooks, artists, and pensioners. So when they say that volunteering is for anyone, they really aren't kidding. The only prerequisite is passion. On the show today, we'll be meeting the men and women who run voluntourism projects in Malaysia and the travellers who take part in them. So you remember Hayati from the start of the episode. She runs Lang Tengah Turtle Watch, and like many of us, she felt that environmental issues just seem kind of distant or just far beyond our control.
You know, even if you read about species depletion, global warming, it's not particularly real. It's sort of theoretical. But I'm just going by the fact that, you know, it was beautiful. There was coral, and now there isn't any. There are no sea urchins, fewer parrotfish. It's very simple. It's very evident.
A couple of years ago, she returned to the beach of her childhood memories.
And I was actually quite shocked to see how degraded the coral was and how much rubbish there was washed up on the shore. And also, I discovered that that particular strip of sand was a nesting spot for turtles.
Sadly, the number of marine turtles in most of Malaysia has plummeted, and some populations are on the brink of extinction.
So even though I have the rights to all the turtle eggs on the whole length and breadth of Pulau Lang Tengah, I still have stiff competition from the poachers. And these are staff from nearby resorts because, you know, one nest clutch of, let's say, 100 eggs or 80 eggs can fetch a good price at market.
So she decided to do something about it and last year started a volunteer program to patrol the beaches. And in that first year, they looked after a total of 2,298 eggs, of which 71% hatched. Now, I'm sure you've noticed that we're living in a world that's increasingly full of these ethical minefields that we have to navigate. From the food that you eat, the brands that you buy, the clothes that you wear, the light bulbs that you install, or whether or not you recycle. Nothing is guilt-free anymore. Not even your holidays.
A lot of tourists think, well, you know, there's so much rubbish on the beach, but then again, aren't I one of these tourists coming here? So there's this sense when you go to these pristine places, well, I'm actually a negative agent, you know, I'm a detrimental factor.
So the origins of voluntourism can be traced to the very human instinct of altruism. Now, altruism is a virtue promoted by all cultures and belief systems. In rural communities, the idea of mutual self-help, for example, bringing in the harvest, is essential for both survival and social cohesion. Once we moved to the city, the spirit of gotong royong has dissipated. We rarely help our neighbours and are lucky to even know their names. However, at critical junctures in history, at times of crisis or disaster, the altruistic impulse breaks through. Perhaps one of the early precursors to modern-day volunteering abroad is the Peace Corps, which was established as a response to the horrors of World War II and was founded in 1961 under John F. Kennedy. Voluntourism, then, is an extension of this impulse, catering to those of us who might not be quite ready to give up all and join the Peace Corps, but who want to do something meaningful in our time off. Next up, we have Leo Biddle. Initially, he was a critic of the negative impact that the tourism industry can have on wildlife, and he accepted a bet to prove that he could do a better job. He founded the Great Orangutan Project, which is an award-winning project located in the Matang Wildlife Center in Sarawak. Here he explains some of the unethical practices involving wildlife in Asia.
No true professional would ever let a foreign tourist come in and start playing with a baby orangutan because, one, it'll never be rehabilitated or put back into the wild. But also, there's a great risk for zoonotic disease transfer. If we move to another iconic animal like an elephant, a lot of people want to ride in the jungle, you know, on the back of an elephant. But volunteers or eco-tourists won't want to hear that elephants are beaten or tortured. In Australia and England, you won't find anywhere that will let you ride on elephants because the public in England and Australia know that in order to achieve that, you have to break the elephant's spirit. I mean, I call it eco-myopia. The agent puts the word eco in front of something and then we don't question anymore. Just because we can buy an experience doesn't necessarily mean it's ethical that we should buy that experience.
Fortunately, things are changing. As people become more aware of responsible travel, we now see an influx of volunteers predominantly from the UK and Australia.
My name's Hayley Meader and I'm a cook in the outback in Australia.
In 2009, Hayley watched a documentary about the orangutans in Matang and straight away she decided to go. She's been back 8 times over the last 4 years. She's part of a growing number of people who want more out of their holidays than sipping pina coladas by the pool.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, I guess it's tough for some people. They may only get a short amount of time off each year. So, you know, that's all they want to do is relax by a pool or beach and have a cocktail. But more people want to spend their time away from work and actually doing something that means something to them and actually makes a difference. You know, it's something that they can be proud of for the rest of their lives.
And it's not exactly cheap. Foreigners can pay up to £4,000 to £5,000 to take part in these projects, which cover accommodation, food and a donation to the project, but not your airfare.
It does cost quite a bit of money, but I think it's kind of a money can't buy experience. When people do it, they've had no qualms about coming back again and spending that money there. It can be quite life-changing and rewarding. You know, it makes me feel good that I can just give what I can.
In the world of volunteering, there is a division between skilled and unskilled volunteers. Some have specific desired skills and others just help out with simple but often labour-intensive work like planting trees. For places like the Great Orangutan Project, it really is the cash donation that keeps them going.
The bulk of our volunteers would be middle-aged females. If we're very honest, whilst the work they do is great and very, you know, valuable, it's that cash donation that they're bringing in to help fund the project.
Animal Projects and Environmental Education, or APE for short, is an ethical social enterprise and one of the few Malaysian-run projects. Their managing director is Faria Ma. She always wanted to do something meaningful with her life.
After I graduated and came back, I was looking at a job in social welfare. And I realized that, you know, I'm going to be paid 700 ringgit a month. It was very heartbreaking to know that I can't do what I really want to do because I can't survive. I took the corporate job and tried to do volunteering on the weekends.
In 2007, she founded APE. And their most popular package combines a stint at the zoo, followed by a trip to Sabah.
One of the most exciting things for the volunteers is to actually be able to see individual orangutans. They have their own characters, they have their own tempers, you know. If they don't like your face, they spit at you, you know. If one orangutan wants to keep his blanket, there's no way you're going to trick him out of the blanket. That is super exciting for a lot of volunteers to actually be able to do that.
Now we move from the most iconic animal in Malaysia, the orangutan, and we move to the least known bear in the world, the sun bear, also known as the honey bear, because it loves eating, well, honey. Wong Siew Teh is the founder of the Borneo Sun Bear Conservation Centre. Do his volunteers require a lot of skills?
Actually, no. The prerequisite for any volunteers that work with us is that first you have to work really hard and you are working in a very hot and humid environment. But it will pay off if you have the love for the bears and then you'll feel, you know, all the hard work will eventually pay off at the end of the day when you see those bears smile at you.
Wong Siu Te has seen the volunteerism trend take off.
Oh yes, definitely. You know, as we speak, actually in Malaysia, there are more and more this type of volunteerism programs that involve wildlife conservations and local community. We can see that growing actually on a daily basis. You'll be surprised compared to some 10 years ago or 5 years ago. So that's a good sign, I would take it.
This growing niche is tapping into often very localized grassroots initiatives. Aided by the internet and affordable travel, people are finding new ways to connect and share ideas. At the foot of Jugra Hills in Kuala Selangor, you'll find a 4-acre-large fruit orchard run by volunteer-turned-project maker Arafat.
My name is Arafat. I started a farm in Kuala Selangor in January. I ran it with the goal of practicing sustainable lifestyle and trying to reduce our own carbon footprint. I do this with the help of volunteers from all over the world. It's called Kebun Kaki Bukit, or a farm by the foot of the hill.
So what's life like for the volunteers there?
I guess it's best if you ask one of the volunteers, because since we have one of them here.
Okay, so I'm Lucille. I come from France. I found this farm in a site on internet. Usually we walk in the garden during the morning when the weather is not too hot. For example, yesterday we plant lemongrass. I think when you travel, when you go in a farm or in a family, you can really experience the culture, you can see more the people of the country. So I think it's a good way to travel.
Kebun Kaki Bukit sees itself as sustainable life in practice. Accommodation is free for volunteers who pay only 10 ringgit for food. Obviously, this is not a huge money-making enterprise, but what we're discerning here is a whole spectrum of travellers, a global community who cares about the issues facing the world. It seems that what you do in your off time says as much about who you are as what you do when you're at work. These days, who would ever willingly call themselves a tourist anyway? In the second part of the show, we look at some of the challenges and opportunities facing this emerging niche. Where there's money to be made, there's always a chance of unscrupulous agents and projects looking to take advantage.
So then how do you differentiate yourself from all the other charlatans out there calling themselves an eco-resort?
One program in another country, they said like they spent about £6,000 when they queried how much they actually get. The local project only gets £10.
So please don't go anywhere. I'm Shifa Situ and this is Here and Now in Malaysia, produced by the Economic Transformation Programme. You're listening to Here and Now in Malaysia, produced by the Economic Transformation Programme. I'm Shifa Situ, and today we're looking into volunteerism, a niche in the travel industry that's tapping into our desire to do good during our time off. Along with these evolving sentiments, a whole array of products are on offer. Some are better than others. Leo Biddle from the Great Orangutan Project has seen the industry change over the last 10 years.
In some cases, we've seen really genuinely wonderful companies that are doing what I would call true ecotourism and true volunteerism. At the other end of the spectrum, what we've seen is that if you call something eco, you could be selling the same product, but just put it on recycled paper, and you can actually charge more sometimes for ecotourism than you can for genuine tourism.
The biggest markets for volunteerism is the UK and Australia. Here, between 50 to 75% of the volunteerism packages are sold through the big travel agents who add on their own fee. Here's Farah Amar from Animal Projects and Environmental Education.
And there are lots of travel companies who are touting volunteer programs, but those programs may or may not have similar outcomes. Some of them are actually run very well. People who are interested in these programs do actually need to check up and see whether they actually show the results that conservation requires.
Now, many volunteers travel extensively across Asia. They meet each other and exchange notes regularly. In the age of online travel forums and Facebook, word really does get around.
Yeah, we've actually heard because we've had so many years experience in this, and a lot of these travelers, they take the whole year off and they travel from project to project, from country to country. One program in another country, they said like they spent £6,000 when they queried how much they actually get. The local project only gets £10. So that's quite atrocious.
Here's Hayley Meter, an Australian cook who's been back to the orangutan project in Matang 8 times in the last 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive trend going on at the moment, and it's a tough one. As much as it creates awareness for people, and it's brilliant that that's happening, most of the places where there's eco-friendly tourism happens, your dollar can go a long way there. And I think sometimes the travel agents are taking advantage of these places. And I mean, you've just got to be smart about it. If you're booking these holidays, you should really do some research and really find out how much of your money does get to the centre.
Hayati, who runs the Lang Tengah Turtle Project in Terengganu, is sceptical about the eco label and those who exploit it.
And I don't see tourism and conservation work as being mutually exclusive. I mean, I think they can work together. So then how do you differentiate yourself from all the other charlatans out there calling themselves an eco resort, you know? So I think it's just a word of mouth. They can actually see what you're up to, and I think they'll tell their friends.
So word of mouth really is a critical element for the voluntourism community. Someone who's looking to capitalise on this growing trend is Daniel Quilter. He's been in Malaysia for 8 years and has worked in the responsible tourism industry in Sepadan and founded Bubbles Resorts on Pulau Perhentian, another turtle conservation project. He's also the founder of Ecoter.
So we have ecoter.com, which is actually kind of like a matchmaking service for volunteers.
For a fee of £15, users can contact a range of volunteer projects around the world. The second part of Ecoter is Ecoter Responsible Travel, a company that's focused solely on Malaysia and Indonesia. Is it mostly geared to foreigners or locals as well?
Unfortunately, yes, it is. Mainly for foreigners at the moment. The main thing I think many foreigners come is because Malaysians don't really know about it yet. So we are starting to see an increase in Singaporeans and people from Hong Kong, but Malaysia's still a little bit slow. Borneo is made out to be this amazing, mystical island, because you've got the orangutans, you've got Sipadan, you've got all these amazing treasures in Septon Sabah. But actually, when you talk to West Malaysians, they hardly ever go to Sabah, you know? Come on their honeymoon to come to Malaysia. You go to on their honeymoon to Langkawi. You go on their honeymoon to go to Sipadan and Mabor.
The Borneo Sun Bear Conservation Centre relies heavily on the support of foreign volunteerists. Here's the founder, Wong Siu Te.
Until now, we have more than 1,100 volunteers come and help us to do various jobs. Our volunteers come from all over the world. You know, we have a small group of volunteers come from Malaysia locally and also internationally. Majority of the volunteers come from Australia, UK, US, Canada, German, Denmark. We also have Korean, Japanese, well, in short, many, many countries.
And here's Faria Ma from APE.
The largest number of volunteers that we get are from UK, US, Sweden. Yeah, mostly European countries. We have from Germany, from Denmark, from the US, Canada.
Are there any from Malaysia?
We've only had one girl and one boy, Malaysian.
And Arafat, our farmer from Kuala Selangor.
Well, so far, I've had only one volunteer from Malaysia, but I've had about 55 or 60 from foreign countries.
Now here's Rizal. He's a rare breed. He's a Malaysian voluntourist. He's travelled to Nepal and Japan with the Ecoter group. Maybe he can help us understand why Malaysians still haven't bought into the voluntourism concept.
So when I tried to explain to my friends or my family, they kept asking me, why do you have to pay to volunteer? So I said, it's not about the volunteering. You pay for your lodging, you pay for the food, and of course the airfare. Of course, you're not going to get salary out of it because it's volunteer.
Faria Ma from APE also feels that Malaysians have yet to embrace the idea of volunteerism.
The general mentality is that if I'm volunteering, that means I'm giving my time and you cover everything else. I shouldn't be spending out of my own pocket. Whereas volunteering in this sense means that you are actually contributing monetarily as well as physically. I think that idea hasn't settled so much.
Now another issue is the price. With an industry geared to foreign travellers, the average Malaysian can find themselves priced out of the market. Here's Hayati, who runs a small turtle conservation project in Terengganu.
Yeah, if you look at some international programs, people charge vast amounts of money
£4,000, whatever, you know, £5,000. I just feel as if that would be pricing a lot of Malaysians out. Even at 80 ringgit, some Malaysian students have said, oh, it's actually quite a lot, you know, over a week.
What's your read on the difference between, you know, local and international volunteers?
I think that possibly there are just far more programs that have already been set up in places like Britain. Some of the people who came to volunteer last year were on gap years. So it's like the gap year is not just about seeing the world, but possibly doing something useful. But I found that when we did give the talks to the students, they were very receptive. And we've had the second batch of students from Taylor's University. They're leaving today. I think they might have just left the island. And once they're on the island, it's a real eye-opener. So I think it's just a question of reaching out, spreading the word, really.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. It's like you say, if you're not aware of it, you don't know it, no one, yeah, actually tries to connect the dots.
And unfortunately, the turtles decided not to come up.
Well, you know, they don't turn up on demand.
You can't force nature to do what you want it to do. What they did see, though, were things like they saw phosphorescence in the water, amazing stars, so clear, and just the whole Milky Way sort of spread out before you, and a thunderstorm passed by. So sort of amazing shift when the clouds covered the moon. Things like that, that I think just maybe a taster of what it's like to be living out in the open, living very simply, lighting fires, drawing water from the well, and just realizing how, you know, it's not so easy. You know, it's not as if you switch on the gas or you just switch on a light. But it certainly, I think, rouses their curiosity and interest. And there's this sense, well, I could do this again.
So whether you're looking to reconnect with nature, to help save endangered species or plant trees or even grow organic vegetables, there's a lot of possibilities and potential in this small but growing market.
Yeah, I think in terms of the actual whole industry, Thailand and Borneo are the two main actual areas in the whole of the world for the whole industry. So West Malaysia is kind of in the middle. So they can really focus on trying to get like the people going from Bangkok down to Singapore, getting that traffic through. So those three main hubs, everyone comes over from Europe, over to Australia. So I think that is the main key to try and get Malaysia to grow.
Malaysia already has a well-developed tourism industry. So for the tourism part of voluntourism, few of our neighbouring countries can compete, at least for now.
I think definitely the potential is very big. Ministry of Tourism has also included volunteer travel in their new strategies. The potential is definitely great, and if we don't buck up, we'll lose out to countries like Indonesia, Philippines and Vietnam, because all these countries have big potentials for volunteer.
So how then do we ensure that we don't lose out to other competitors?
Let me put it this way. Animal welfare in general in Asia is not where we would like it to be. And most of these volunteers are coming from countries that have come to that realization. They realize that, good Lord, I've destroyed, or our country, we have destroyed everything that we have. What little that the world has, let's work with them to do something about it.
So we have an industry with great potential, but travellers out there are increasingly well-informed and will not support unsustainable or unethical practices. As we strive for developed nation status, we need to consider deeply what developed really means. It means not waiting for others to make the first move, but to lead by example. I think there's a great opportunity for Malaysia to become the gold standard in responsible tourism and to tap into global sentiment and the desire to do the right thing. So what are the opportunities for Malaysia? Malaysia's number one selling point is, without a doubt, its unrivaled biodiversity. The number of species crammed within a square metre, from the rainforest to coral reefs. And the world is ready to take part in looking after it. So far, all the people I've spoken to share this belief, that whatever work you're doing, whether big or small, is adding to a growing global awareness, a community that refuses to be passive bystanders. Conservation work is hard and uncertain. Here's Hayati on her outlook for the Turtle Watch project.
We're small, we're young, we're new. I don't even know whether, in terms of actual statistical figures, whether we're making a huge change. But what I'm hoping is that we make a big change in terms of people's awareness and their attitudes.
As we package and promote our nature for foreign tourists, I think we should ask ourselves one critical question. If we don't care, why should they? I'm Shifa Situ, and this is Here and Now in Malaysia, produced by the Economic Transformation Programme.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.